This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane, sitting in for Terry Gross, who's home today nursing a little bug. So we turn to our archives. Earlier this year, movie audiences took to a psychopathic anti-hero in Jonathan Demme's film The Silence of the Lambs. Dr. Hannibal, the cannibal Lecter, is a brilliant psychiatrist who is also a demented killer. Demented enough to eat his victims, and effete enough to wash them down with a carefully selected glass of Chianti. This chilling and perverse performance was created by actor Anthony Hopkins. Hopkins also played the humane doctor in David Lynch's film The Elephant Man. Terry spoke with Anthony Hopkins when The Silence of the Lambs opened in theaters. Soon you'll be able to see his creepy portrayal of Hannibal Lecter at home. The video version will be out later this month. In The Silence of the Lambs, Jodie Foster plays an FBI investigator who visits Lecter in prison, hoping his brilliant criminal mind will reveal clues to help her track down another serial killer known as Buffalo Bill.
I'm offering you a psychological profile of Buffalo Bill based on the case evidence. I'll help you catch him, Terry.
You know who he is, don't you? Tell me who decapitated your patient, Doctor.
All good things to those who wait. I've waited, Clarice, but how long can you and old Jackie boy wait? Our little Billy must already be searching for that next special lady.
Anthony Hopkins told Terry how he came up with a voice for Hannibal Lecter.
When I was assured that the part was on offer to me, I started to work on it and simply to learn the lines and think about it. And it was such a well-written part, and the story was so compelling, that when I, after the first reading, I heard the voice of Hannibal Lecter. It sort of, I heard it in my head, I saw a vision of it, I saw what he looked like. Well, not strictly within the first reading, but let's say maybe two or three readings of the script. Because my work is kind of quite simple. I just learn it, you know, before I start filming. Just learn the text, learn the words. And the voice came. And for some reason, I don't know why, the voice, in fact, identified the character for me, and I saw within a few more days what he looked like, the hair being slicked back and the way he moved, his grace and elegance.
Describe what you did with your voice.
Well, it was there was one line which I think you've seen on the trailers, and I said, I'll help you catch him, Clarice. I don't know what it was. It was just a kind of tone, and there's a speech where he says, one of the speeches that made me understand man was, he said, you know what you look like to me with your good bag and your cheap shoes? You look like a rube, a well-scrubbed hustling rube with a little taste. And I thought, that's it, that's the character.
You know, there's something both very effete, very scary, and very purring about the voice.
Yes.
The
thing is, if you're playing an evil character, if you're playing somebody who's mad or evil,
mm-hmm.
Well, let's say, just take the first part. If you're playing somebody who's mad, the thing is not to play him mad, but to play the opposite, play him as ultra-sane. If you're playing somebody who's evil, play the good side of him. And that makes him more scary, because you humanize him. Because nobody is all evil. Nobody is all good. Whatever those terms mean, but nobody is all one thing. So what I do as an actor is to find out what the other side of the character is. And I found out with Lecter that, in fact, I think his problem is, or his peculiar psychology is, that he is so in control of himself, mentally, spiritually, physically, whichever way, he's so totally in control of every aspect of his thinking that he is completely mad, because nobody can be in that much control. It's as if he is so sane, he's flipped over into the world of the dark and the irrational.
Now, I don't know if this is connected to the control you see the characters having, but you rarely blink in the movie. I mean, the eyes have a fixed stare and they're wide open all the time.
Yes. I don't know. I didn't analyze much about the part. I mean, I just had a hunch on how to play him. First of all, when you're playing a character like this, you have to like him. The actor has to somehow like him. And I think there's something very terrifying about people who are unblinking. It's that they are so certain. They have no doubts, no uncertainty. And they're so certain that makes them terrifying. If you look at all the great monstrous political leaders in our century, you know.
One of which you've played.
Yes.
Yes.
Old Adolf, yes. They rise to power because they're so certain, they have no doubts. Their minds are already made up. Somebody said of Hitler, a journalist who interviewed Hitler in 1936, before the war, she said, Hitler has in his library 1,000 books. He hasn't read any one of them. But of course he doesn't need to, because his mind is already made up. And I found that the most apocalyptic, frightening vision of a man. And I think it's the same with Lecter. He knows with absolute certainty what he is and what everyone else is around him.
What kind of kidding took place on the set in between shooting?
We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of laughs on the set. I'd go up behind people. There'd be people working on the women working on the props or something. Or, you know, some of the guys walked around. I got behind them and said, good evening. Are you having pleasant dreams? And they'd sort of jump because they got used to this character I was playing. And I, at the end of the day shooting, you know, they get into the elevator and I creep in afterwards. I say, I got you all in my elevator. So they used to sort of freak out, but not seriously, but it was a joke. It was a kind of funny joke. Everyone on the set was very happy. I mean, everyone seemed to work very, with a great deal of ease.
You've said that you really liked working with Jonathan Demme. Is there any kind of direction that he gave you that is different from what you're used to getting? Is there something different about the style that he works in?
I think the great hallmark, for me anyway, of the great sort of positive for me is when directors, it's not that they exactly leave you alone, but what they do, they let you develop the character. And it's really a question of trust. And what I felt with Jonathan was that he had total trust in me as an actor. And because he paid me that compliment, I had total trust in him as a director. And I'd seen some of his films. I'd seen Something Wild, Married to the Mob. And I thought I knew that I was in the hands of a very skilled craftsman. He would listen to some of my suggestions that I wanted to do. And, you know, he asked me, he said, how do you feel about, how would you like to first be seen, you know, when the film spends a lot of time talking about Lecter before they see him. And I said, well, if you don't mind, I said, I'd like to just be seen standing right in the middle of the cell, as if I'm waiting for her. And he said, God, that's weird. He said, well, I said, well, it's the most terrifying thing I can think of, is the very monster that she's listened to and heard about. When she actually goes towards him and she comes into eye contact, comes into the area of his cell, there he is staring straight at her with a nice smile on his face. And I sensed my own psyche, whatever that means, that's the most terrifying thing. That's the sort of base of my nightmares, in a way. Or it was as a child.
Somebody waiting for you?
Somebody waiting for me in the corner on the top of the stairs. Or I used to have a dream. I'd open the door. When I was a child, there'd be banging on the front door of the house in the dark, and it was always moonlight. And as I opened the door, there'd be nobody there, but across the street, in a window, three floors up in the building opposite, there was a face staring out at me and smiling. That was the most terrifying nightmare. In itself, it doesn't sound frightening, but there's something strange about that. And this is what I wanted to do to the audience. I wanted them to just take that moment of horror when they see Lecter, that they don't see somebody with blood dripping off his mouth. They see a very pleasant, normal-looking man standing to attention in the middle of his house. Very weird.
Actor Anthony Hopkins speaking with Terry Gross. He played Dr. Hannibal, the cannibal Lecter, in Jonathan Demme's film The Silence of the Lambs, which will be out on home video later this month. His other roles have included the psychiatrist in the theatrical production of Equus and the compassionate doctor in David Lynch's film The Elephant Man. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's return to Terry's interview with actor Anthony Hopkins.
You know, it's interesting. You've worked with the two most offbeat, stylish of the younger directors, Jonathan Demme and David Lynch. And they're maybe the two most idiosyncratic in the kinds of movies that they make. And I think it's interesting that you, a British actor coming from the National Theatre, you know, from a more classic theatre, has ended up working with them.
Well, I mean, I've been trying for years to break away from that image of the British National Theatre. I mean, I've worked there, and I've enjoyed myself. I've had a good time there, but it's something I've been predominantly interested in films, and especially American movies. I've always been a fan of American films ever since I was a kid. So working with somebody like Lynch or Demme is always an experience. I mean, David Lynch and Demme are, I think, I don't know, I haven't seen David for 10 years, 12 years, or whatever it's been. But I think they're two opposites in a way. I mean, they're both quirky, they're both idiosyncratic. But I can recall David's methods were probably different to Jonathan's. Jonathan seemed to be very precise. He knew what he wanted immediately, I think. David was living in another world. He had an inner film going on in his own mind anyway, and he saw visions and images that he wanted. And I remember, actually, I regret it now, but I was rather, I used to feel kind of irritated because I didn't know what he wanted. But watching his movies since, like Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart, I see, you know, that the man's got, you know, he's got such a powerful image in his own mind, but he has his own way of translating it.
Let me ask you this. When you were doing that scene where you see the Elephant Man for the first time, and of course, in real life, you weren't looking at anything, you know, because John Hurt wasn't made up yet. Did you use sense memory or anything to get involved with an emotion from your past that would make you feel the way the character is supposed to be feeling? Do you do that?
No, I remember that morning. What I do remember very clearly was that I was feeling... I'd been hanging around for days, actually, and I was feeling particularly vulnerable. And I suppose a bit depressed. I don't know what it was about. I can't remember. And I remembered I fixed my eye on a spot on the wall. And for some reason, I can't understand it to this day what happened, but the 23rd Psalm, which is used by John Hurt in the film, in fact, but the 23rd Psalm came into my mind. Now, I don't know why. I hadn't remembered it since I'd been in school. And for some reason, it came into my mind. And I remember the overpowering impressions when I was a child in school of green hills and valleys and lakes, which were around my hometown when I was a child, and the woods and the forests and the valley and all that. And it was a very strange sensation. There was a chalk spot on the wall opposite me. I fixed my eye on that, and this inner voice, it was my own voice, but it was like a memory, like a kind of recitation of, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, he maketh me." And it must have had the right emotional reaction, because that's what happened. I don't understand it, and I'm glad David Lynch didn't ask me to do it again, because I probably wouldn't have been able to repeat it. Because those things happen once in a while, you know, and you can't really rely upon them. They happen or they don't happen. And if they don't happen, you have to do it purely technical.
You know, both of the movies that we've been talking about, Silence of the Lambs and The Elephant Man, in both of them you play very educated people. And I'm wondering what kind of education you had yourself.
Well, I was hopeless at school. I was a non-starter. When I was at school, 4 years of age, I didn't understand what the teachers were talking about. I was way behind everyone else. And looking back on it, I suppose that's why I became an actor. A lot of actors I know, there are exceptions to the rule. I know some actors who are very, very clever and went to university and college and all that. But I was one of the, I was one of those who just didn't know what time of day it was. I was living in another world, except I didn't know what world that was that I was inhabiting. So as I started growing up, I became quite a mimic, because I suppose this was my way of coping and a sense of belonging by being able to imitate authority like schoolmasters and, you know. But as a student, I was hopeless. I guess I was what they call slow or backward. I certainly wasn't very swift academically, so when I get to play these intelligent parts now, these very erudite men, I have to laugh or smile to myself, because that's the last thing I am, is erudite. I mean, I've sort of educated myself over the years. You know, I read a lot. I read quite a lot and have tried to reform my education.
You know, I've seen several articles in which you've been compared to Richard Burton, who, like you, is from Wales. Is that why you're compared, because you're both from the same place?
Well, we're from the same town.
So did he have, like, significance to you when you were coming of age wanting to act?
Yes, he represented to me freedom, because I couldn't function in school. I mean, I'm making it sound terrible, actually. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but I mean, I was a bit lonely, you know. I just wanted to get out of where I was, because it didn't seem I had much future. I had no qualifications from school. What could I be? So Burton represented to me glamour, freedom, and all that. And the only time I met him was when I went to ask him for his autograph when I was about 15 years of age, and I remember thinking, when I left his house, he'd signed my autograph book. I thought, God, I wish I could be like that, you know. I wish I could be him, or I wish I could be famous or something like that. And it was the rocket fuel, I guess, or that resentment or anger or whatever it was, that drove me on. And ironically, the strange thing was, as fate will have it, I next met Richard Burton in the dressing room in New York in the Plymouth Theatre. I'd started the play Equus in New York in 1974, and Richard Burton took over in 1976. So it was a very strange twist of fate, and that's the second and last time I met him.
Another one of those highly educated parts, I'll point out.
Yes, it was.
You're playing the psychiatrist.
Yes. But it was extraordinary meeting Richard in those days, because they are sitting in the same dressing room. He said, "Why haven't we ever worked before? Why haven't we ever worked together?" And he said, "We come from the same town." I said, "Yeah." He said, "My God," he said, "this is weird." But sadly, I never worked with him. It's a great loss that he died.
Actor Anthony Hopkins is my guest. Now, you early on in your career, you performed at the National Theatre, the theatre company founded by Laurence Olivier. He was there for the audition?
Yes, I was interviewed by him, and he auditioned me. And he was playing Othello at the time. And I'd been called in to do this audition for him, and I didn't know any other Shakespeare, you know, not being the most erudite actor in the world, but the only piece I knew was from Othello. And Olivier just opened in a resounding success in the National Theatre. This has gone back almost, 25 years, 20, whatever it is, 27 years ago. And he asked me, he said, what audition piece are you going to do? I said, Othello. He said, "You got a nerve, haven't you?" said. And, Anyway, I did the piece, and he took me in and asked me to join the company. And we became, he was a different generation. He was a much older man than me, but than myself. But we became friends, you know, and I got to know him over the years. We didn't become close friends, because there's a huge generation gap. But he took me under his wing. I was one of his favorite actors. I think I was his favorite because I was very rebellious. I was a bit of a troublemaker. And I think secretly, he sort of admired that. I mean, he was a great disciplinarian. You know, he didn't like people causing trouble. But in a way, if you were troublesome, he respected that in a way. It made him smile, I think.
What kind of trouble did you cause at the National Theatre?
Well, I used to go and demand work. I said, "Give me a part." And they said, "Well, you've only just joined the company." I said, "I don't give a damn." I said, "I'll go back and work in rep." I said, "Give me a part. You know, I'm going to stand around carrying spears for the rest of my life." And he got to hear about this, and he said, "You're very feisty, dear heart, you know, dear boy." And anyway, he gave me some good breaks and good chances, and I was very, very pugnacious, very arrogant, very aggressive. And looking back, I'm glad I was. I've had to sort of jettison a lot of that as the years have gone by, because it's finally it's something, it's a kind of ballast that you no longer need as you get older, I think. So I'm much more at ease with myself now, and not so feisty.
What would you call Olivier when you worked with him and knew him?
Larry.
Not Sir Larry or anything?
No, he there was a time when he gave you permission. He said, you'd call him Sir, you know, he'd say, "You can call me Larry." So you call him Larry. It's always a great privilege then. But I got to know him over the years, and he was a very funny man. He was an extraordinary man, a great, great actor. The greatest sort of theatrical talent of his age, I think. The people say, you know, who's the next Olivier? I don't think there's anyone will ever. There is no one who will touch him.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking
with
us.
Pleasant dreams.
Actor Anthony Hopkins speaking with Terry Gross. The Silence of the Lambs will be released later this month on home video. Hopkins also had a starring role in David Lynch's 1980 film, The Elephant Man. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.